Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Ladies and gentlemen, to the latest edition of Woke Bros, I'm Big Waz, of course. Joining me, in, as always, are my two comrades here in Los Angeles and out on the planet of Brooklyn, Dando Vila and Michael Jamal Brooks. What's happening with you fellas?
Not much, man.
On today's show, we're going to get to the, you know, the untimely passing. Well, I mean, the guy was 92, but still sad that Jerry Stiller passed away. Legendary comic. We're going to pay tribute to him. As you guys have been noticing, as my astute colleague Nando pointed out, the normies are starting to get hitched to the idea that China's to blame for everything. Like, you're seeing this all over the place. Like, you know, people that don't necessarily read the Jacobin, you know, right, what I'm saying? And get their news intake from, you know, just the nightly news, whether it be CNN or just their local broadcast. Those kinds of people are now getting onto the whole China did it angle. And we're going to get into the China blame game. But first, you know, we don't usually get into geopolitics here on Woke Bros. We usually try to stay domestic, but something happened out in South America, out in Venezuela, that was just a little too ridiculously funny, stupid, hilarious, not to cover here. And so, Nando, I wanted to open this up to you. Could you give us a brief breakdown of what happened with this botched coup attempt out in Venezuela?
And was your family involved?
I definitely have some very close friends from Miami who were probably involved in some way. So a couple weeks ago, the Venezuelan government announced that they had stopped a coup attempt on Nicolas Maduro. And in the days since, the details have come out and they're just fucking hilarious. So turns out they stopped these two basically fishing boats filled with former Venezuelan commandos, and including two American commandos, whose goal was to overthrow Nicolas Maduro. I mean, this was like 50 people on two boats, not, you know, and they got into a little firefight. The Venezuelan military, which is very well armed and very large, killed eight of them and arrested 13 of the Venezuelans, and including arrested the two Americans who were there with their passports, with identifying documents, just the classic thing that you do when you're doing a covert mission, you bring your ID, you know? And,
Make sure I have two forms of identification, bro.
Right, you know. I'm sure that they were thinking, like, in their heads, like, I better have my American passport, because, like, once the Venezuelans, like, capture us, like, if we just flash our American passports, they'll let us go. It's in the days since it's come out, like, the details of this coup and this operation and how it all came to be. And they're just so perfect for our time. They're like our time distilled into its pure essence. So turns out there's this guy named Justin Goudreau, who was a former American Green Beret, born in Canada, actually, also fought in the Canadian military, but he was in the American Army Special Forces from 2001 to 2016. So basically, like, the entire war on terror, he was there fighting it. He, you know, tons of medals, 3 Bronze Stars. And since he retired, he founded this private security firm, like a lot of former special forces guys do. And, you know, he pitched himself all over the place. He tried to do this, like, very strange scheme after the Parkland shooting, in which he would go to schools in Florida and be like to all the parents, if you guys pay me $8.99 a day or a month, I'll send in special forces into the schools disguised as teachers to protect your kids. So, like, for the price of a Netflix, price of a Netflix subscription, you get some special forces guys disguised as teachers. I mean, how this whole thing would work is, like, insane. It's unclear whether any of it actually came to be. And then he became a private security contractor for some rich people in Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria, and God knows what he did there. And then it seems like he got in touch with the Trump administration and did security for a rally. And then he got hired by Richard Branson, who put on that fucking insane concert on the border between Colombia and Venezuela to like promote regime change in Venezuela. And he did.
So embarrassing, man.
It's so embarrassing. And then, so that's when he first went to, you know, that region and sort of got turned on to the whole Venezuelan issue. And he started meeting some, you know, Venezuelan dissidents and anti-Maduro people in that concert. And one of them was this guy named Clive Alcala, who is a retired Venezuelan general who used to be like pro-Chavez and has since kind of defected and gone to the other side. And he's based in Colombia. And as far as I can tell, this guy is like a total insane, like psychopath who has been caught like working with Colombian guerrillas to give them surface to air missiles in exchange for cocaine, trying all kinds of harebrained plots to overthrow Maduro. Anyway, this guy and Gaudreau got in contact and they hatched this plan along with some very high level people in Guaido's circle, including this guy in Miami named JJ Rendon, who's like, as far as I can tell, is like a political consultant who runs the dissident movement, the Venezuelan, like Venezuelan kind of diaspora in Miami, the anti-Maduro group of people in Miami. And they basically came up with this plan to send in private contractors and these mercenaries to overthrow Maduro. And it all fell apart very quickly, as you can imagine. And it just like the comical nature of it, like the fact that this like insane plot, like the Venezuelan military is huge and very well armed. And it's like the thought that like a few dozen guys can pull this off is just like absolutely insane. But it just all feeds into this kind of insane grifty mentality that has taken over the world, in which like everyone is just trying to like fake it till they make it. And like this guy reminds me a lot of the Firefest guy, you know, like at one point, like it all was kind of falling apart and he was probably just like, fuck it, let's do it and be legends, you know, like of course it all fell apart. But anyway, it's just like, it's just like this hilarious thing that happened that, you know, if it weren't so funny, it'd be depressing because obviously he fits into this whole narrative of like that we should just do regime change in Venezuela, that, you know, this guy Guaido, who is obviously this fucking clown, is the legitimate recognized president of Venezuela by the United States and like 60 other governments in the world. You know, this guy who's like actively trying to kill Maduro. Like, it's just insane.
You got to realize when I interviewed, and not just Americans in general, how crazy it is and how delusional they are about Venezuela just because of the relentless, basically state corporate propaganda. That when we were in Brazil interviewing Lula, and of course Lula is going to oppose U.S. coups in general, but he's also, especially when he's speaking, I mean, he actually is very conscious of what he – his position doesn't change, but when he's speaking to like a left media, he might be more willing to, you know, like he's got criticisms of everybody. So it isn't even necessarily that he's, you know, like, you know, as the right wing would present it, like in the tank for Maduro or something, but he opposes U.S. coup mongering and trying to reverse the left in Latin America. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that you have to realize that he just doesn't get it. Like, he's just like, he gets U.S. coups. He gets U.S. foreign policy. He has an intricate understanding of Venezuela, all of this stuff. But the part of just like, he's like, and then there's this guy that just says he's president and he just starts laughing. Like, he just didn't, he's just like, what? Like, how does like all the other parts trapped? Like, the United States has interfered in Brazil. The United States, like, there's geostrategic interests. We've got to resist as Latin America and all this other stuff. But that one particular part of, like, who the fuck is this Juan Guaido guy? And, like, where does he get off saying he's president?
He put his signature.
What are you talking about? Like,
he put his signature on the document with this guy Goudreau, like the Silver Court, like the document that it's like you never get a paper in these things. Like you never get an actual physical copy of the paper which says like we're gonna do the bad thing. Like it's always like
we're going to do the murderous coup.
Yeah. And then the other part of it, his fucking signature on it.
Put his fucking signature on it. But again, like only Nancy the best Pelosi people. Gave him Nancy Pelosi gave him a standing O. And you know, the two other things I want to say on this. One is that we don't know U.S. involvement the most. I think it's too clever for the Trump administration, honestly. And honestly, they're such thugs that I don't think they need the excuse. But the only thing that I have heard that is a little bit more concerning is the idea that this is bait, basically. Like, oh, okay, well, now you have Americans hostage. Who cares that they were there as an act of terrorism? You've got them. So now we're going to invade you. And Mike Pompeo did that real thuggish. Yeah. He's such a fat bag of shit. He did that real thuggish, like he was just like, huh, well, trust me, like if we were involved, it would have went down a lot different.
No way.
On the last point, with this guy, JJ Rondon is really interesting figure because I know like now everybody, because of like Russiagate and how stupid like liberals got about like election hacking and everything, I feel like it's almost gotten to the point where because that conversation became so stupid, it doesn't mean that like manipulating public opinion through like disinformation online or potentially hacking elections isn't a real thing. And apropos of that, there was a piece that came out in March 31st, 2016 in Bloomberg, actually. It was an amazing piece called How to Hack an Election. And this Colombian computer programmer, Andres Sepulveda, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, was basically from like a maximum security prison, was like starting in 2005, basically, I helped hack and do bot campaigns and all of this shit for right-wing candidates across Latin America. And he accused this guy, JJ Rendon, and Rendon, I think, threatened to sue Bloomberg and all this stuff. But like he had emails. He didn't just say it. That JJ Rendon was like his point person for not only these dirty tricks, but also protect, you know, in some cases, potentially like cutting deals with cartels in different countries and stuff like that. So there's a lot to that. And it is funny that JJ Rendon will go to a TED talk and do like a, this is how you bring democracy to my country. Yeah. And it's like, he's actually this very sinister right-wing figure, you know?
Well, the other thing that's funny to me is that the epithet that Maduro always gets in the U.S. media is murderous dictator. He's a murderous dictator. He's a murderous dictator. If he were actually like such a murderous dictator, the fact that he hasn't like executed Guaido yet, like literally, like the guy put his fucking signature on a piece of paper that says hiring a psychopath Green Beret to murder me, you know, like. Like, imagine, like, in the United States, what would happen if, like, some Democratic congressman had set up even, like, a meeting with a private contractor to, like, off, some Ukrainian fucking Nazi thugs to off Donald Trump.
And then, like, signed a document that said, here's the cash.
Yeah, exactly. Like, here's a bag. Awesome. Here's a bag full of money.
Barack Obama want a third term, and like, I contract you to take fishing vessels into the Potomac.
Like the fact that Guaido, like at very least, isn't in jail right now. Like, what is going on? Like, what kind of authoritarian dictator is he?
Kid operate like.
Yeah, he just travels freely to Miami,
being like, I'm the president, and he gets to meet with heads of states. He gets a standing O in Congress. When he goes back to Venezuela, they like throw rice at him at the airport.
The other hilarious thing is that Guaido, of course, like had his signature on the document, and he was like, no, I didn't know this guy. Like he denied it. And then like a day later, the Maduro government releases a recording. They have an actual recording of a conversation that Guaido had with this Goudreau guy. Like there was like one step ahead of him. You know, he's just like the biggest shithead on the planet. You know, he like travels around with his astrology advisor. Like he has like a full-time page.
Now I don't see what the problem with that is. I don't know why everybody's got to get dirty on astrology.
Now I'm ready for the Netflix show on this guy, man. Narcos Venezuela. We got to get We got to get some great Latin American actor to portray this dude, because he sounds like a Bond villain at this point.
I mean, I don't know, Guido. I'm gonna say this is a Coen Brothers job.
Yeah,
right.
Or like an Armando Iannucci like movie.
Yeah,
Like
you signed the fucking papers.
You signed.
Just like a death Stalin. It's all in Venezuela and Colombia, but they all just have like obnoxious British accents, and right. It's just like you signed the fucking papers for the coup. Just like, yeah, it was a fucking agreement. Nancy Pelosi, you don't give me a hand job. What's the problem?
Dude, he was a fucking Taurus. I thought he was going to be an imbibed.
And it's just crazy, man, that like, you know, people that were supposed to be taken seriously in the U.S. government, it's like, yeah, that's one of my dudes, you know, like this is somebody I'm willing to consort with. And then, you know, just the freaking, obviously everybody gets to go out and make a living, but like this shit is problematic.
I would say being international mercenaries is kind of
like, I mean,
international murder Rico, for hire like, cartels. Like, yeah.
The stuff in Puerto Rico gets like glossed over in all the reporting, but it's like, what the fuck was this guy doing? Like, Puerto Rico like became like almost like a failed state after Hurricane Maria. It was just like basically like, you know, the rich people were fucking terrified that like all the poors were going to come steal like everything. So they probably hired like all these mercenaries to like protect their property and shit. And like, who knows like what the fuck they were doing, like just murdering people left and right. Like anyone that they thought was like getting too close or something. Like, yeah, like we need to do, we really do need to do have like a federal jobs program just for, you know, former Green Berets that go crazy in the war on terror, just so they don't keep doing it like all over the place. We need to find some sort of like you know, like reinsertion program to society.
But it's a real instrument of foreign policy. I mean, this stuff is used. I mean, it just so happens to be that this is kind of comical, but I mean, going back to everybody knew about Blackwater back in the Bush era, how they were using Afghanistan and Iraq. These companies are all over, particularly in Africa. Eric Prince is still around. Eric Prince is tight with the Trump administration, and he's also pitching business to the Chinese for their projects in Africa and for Gulf countries as well. So actually,
Venezuela coup.
According to Google, Eric Prince is an American businessman philanthropist. Former Navy SEAL and founder of the private military company Blackwater.
Your classic philanthropist slash
killer, right? Right. Everything, you know, you meet those kind of people on the east side of LA every day, Nando.
Blackwater guys killed people in Iraq it was the Nisour Square massacre, and it was so flagrant that they actually got pressed charges for murder in the United States.
Yeah.
Now think of what the U.S. I'm sorry. I'm not demonizing any, like, definitely not individual members of the military, but I'm sorry. Are we fucking children? Everybody, if you go to another place, you're murdering people and violating human rights every fucking hour, let alone a bunch of roided up private security contractors. And they opened fire and lit up a square to the extent that everybody was for a minute was like, well, at least in this specific instance, you went too far.
Yeah.
Yeah. On that note, man, geez, that's a good laugh. I hadn't really been up on that until Nando actually shared that with the group earlier. And, that's just incredible. But we move on to the China panic because, you know, it's inevitable. It's kind of how politics function, and in a lot of ways, how it's always functioned. Like, there's always a sort of buck passing slash blame game that goes on whenever something horrific happens, right? This happens to be not only just a global pandemic, but a recession, depression, financial meltdown. There's no other way to describe it. 30 million people on unemployment right now, and that number is only going to get higher and higher and higher as we continue to battle this thing. And, you know, the administration's favorite, you know, sort of whipping boy has been the Chinese government. And I want to say, first of all, we don't, just because this happens a lot of times, like just because Trump says something, there's an impulse to go with the equal and opposite of whatever it is that he said, that, you know, just because he's calling China the evil empire, we have to then call them, like, I don't even know, the Force or whatever. Like, I don't watch Star Wars. I don't know what the freaking analogy is. But you get my drift here, right? Like, I think there's an impulse for certain liberals to be like, no, China did this, and China's actually handled it great. And China's like, well, no, China lied about a lot of the facts. They were slow in rolling this shit out. They were freaking jailing doctors and shit who were trying to get the information out very early on in the process. They weren't great. But, you know, by January, they had told us about it. You know, I think it was January 18th, we got our first case. And we didn't shut down the freaking country or do... And all of the things that needed to be done. Not just the... Because, like, the shelter in place is just one freaking measure, right? Like, it's like putting a Band-Aid or putting peroxide in a freaking gash. Like, it's one thing. But you got to do a whole bunch of other things. You got to sew it up, clean it up. You got to do all of these other things in concert with that to make sure that everything gets back rolling. But, you know, there's this idea out there that basically China made this in a lab. This is freaking, economic warfare. Meanwhile, by the way, you know, we're the biggest Chinese consumer in the world. The idea that China wants less money from us to hurt themselves. Like, we're so intertwined with the Chinese economy. Like, this idea that they want to kill America off so that they can make no more money ever again. Somebody would have to explain that to somebody as dumb as me. But, you know, you're seeing it out there, though. Like, we mentioned it at the top of the show that it's more and more you're starting to hear people say, man, China really fucked this year, didn't it? China. You know, I just wanted to open up the discussion for you guys to, like, how people should be approaching this information and, like, the proper context to put China's role in all of this.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely noticed it in my life. People asking me about China and all manner of things, not just with the coronavirus thing, but, you know, 5G and, like, whether that's going to kill us all. And, you know, it's just it's starting to feel like we're creating the new monster, right? Like, we're the American empire. We always need to have a big monster to slay. For a long time, it was the Soviet Union. That was, like, the perfect villain for the American empire. And then when the Soviet Union went away, we needed to create a new one. And that was jihadi terrorism. And now no one gives a shit about that. Like, no one gives a shit about ISIS.
It's just over, man.
For terrorism. Yeah, man, like, I'm fucking tired
really
of it. Yeah.
Like,
it's,
you know,
that should be the name of the episode, by the way.
Yeah.
It's, like, over for terrorism.
It's over for terrorism. No, like jihadi terrorists could, like, blow up, like, some fucking, and, like, no, I'd be like, oh, you know, like, no, like, people are, they need a new one. They need,
folks,
they need
have
a fresh,
moved on to China and on. Mexicans.
So, yeah, China is the new big bad. It's the new big bad of the American empire. So you're starting to see, I think, Trump, I mean, obviously, like on the right.
He's like, no, I beat ISIS. It can't. We can't talk.
Terrible.
Died. This is a pretty bad incident. Yeah, but it doesn't.
ISIS was the last one. Like,
yeah,
like, they literally tried to bring terrorism out from under the ground with ISIS, yeah. Like Night of the Living Dead type shit.
ISIS was the last dance, man.
Yeah. The beheading videos, all of that. It worked for 3 weeks, and then people was like, all right, back to Britney Spears.
Yeah, because, like, even, like, with Syria, like, no one cared. Like, people tried to get, like, the Syria thing.
Right, although it was, like, just this multi-front proxy war with every single actor in the world practically committing war crimes.
Everyone's like,
fuck it.
But China's easy because China's big. And more importantly, when's the Chinese economy going to overtake the United States as number one in the world? Like, in a few years? Like, that psychologically... It, for the American kind of id, is going to be like, there's going to be like, we're going to fucking do all kinds of crazy shit when that happens. Like, I'm already foreseeing, like, all manner of, like, and they're not just going to, like, take it gracefully. Like, okay, we're now number two. Like, we've been number one since World War II, and now we're number two. Like, that's going to fuck with our heads tremendously. But, like, with the whole China thing, like, it's like, what is the upshot? Like, war, you know, like, we're gonna fight China in a war, like, they'll kick our ass, like, or they're like, And it's, like, at the very worst, yeah, nuclear exchange. Like, what are we talking about? Even
the biggest idiot military hawks in Washington know that, like, there is no winning a war against China.
No.
Like, sure, maybe it doesn't end in, you know, the Chinese Communist Party basically doing what the Nazis did in Paris and New York City. Like, maybe it doesn't end like that. But, yeah, like, there's no winning a war against China. Like, even these delusional pricks won't even go that far.
But, like, but Mike, you did a good segment on your show about, like, the sort of the economic underpinnings of all this. And I think it's interesting to sort of summarize that.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, everything you guys said tracks with me for sure. And I think it's that this already started earlier than Trump. As with all things, Trump is going to do it in the most stupid, belligerent way possible. And he's got, I don't know what Steve Bannon actually thinks. I'm not interested in mythologizing Steve Bannon, but Steve Bannon might be a guy who, you know, says, like, we're going to have a war with China in 10 years. And I mean, I don't know. I don't know what that guy thinks. I know that that guy, you know, was not as successful as he felt he deserved to be. And if we could have just, like, made him successfully produce a fucking rap musical and, you know, or like Boys in the Hood Part 2 or whatever the fuck he was trying to do in the 90s, we would be in a better world. But besides that, like, I think Obama did the pivot to Asia in 2014, and that was already tracking with this idea that China's the emerging power and we need to contain it. And that involves 5G. Basically, that's like the next wave of, as far as I can understand. I mean, that's going to be like the platform as we get into so-called smart cities and intelligent appliances.
The metaverse.
The metaverse. I mean, honestly, stuff that we should be resisting and not wanting to do anyways in a lot of ways, or at the very least, like the idea that we're going to say, like, yeah, the whole world is a competition between Silicon Valley companies and, like, Chinese alternatives should be fucking terrifying for the idea of privacy, democracy, and openness. I mean, that should just be like resisted.
Did you see that video in Singapore of the dog robot just like walking through a park being like, you there, like, stop fucking, you know, making out, like, social distancing.
Yeah, like, social distancing. And with a camera that is monitoring people's comings and goings. And by the way, also, like, that's a Boston, I think Boston Dynamics made that robot. Like, it's terrifying enough. That's the cute version. They don't show you, like, they're putting guns on those things. They're putting, like
laser
beams. Those things, like, are you 100%. Fucking kidding me? And then we all know, like, and then it's like, yeah, like, forget when you get into, like, all right, we're going to police certain areas differently. We're going to build in biases on class and race and everything else and actually build that into technology. I mean, that's a whole other – so anyways – there's the competition over 5G because China's dominating that. Then there's just, even if you're not going to, like, fight a war, you still have to justify the fact that we spend more on our military than the next however many countries combined. Bingo. So you go and you look at these think tanks.
Now that terrorism is over and we've declared the war,
and that's why you look at, like, anytime a think tank puts out, like, a, you know, we've got to think about the Pacific in the 21st century.
The best think tank bullshit on China is like, we gotta maintain dominance over the South China Sea. South China Sea, and you sound like you get paid hundreds of thousands of dollars in DC.
Exactly. And you look at the list and it's, you know, it's Raytheon, it's Boeing, and again, this shit is simple. Like, there might be one or two ones that honestly I think are, you know, they are a little bit complicated. Like, I'm not going to lie, I feel for Taiwan. That's a fucking tough situation. And Taiwan is definitely, funnily enough, even though it's, like, literally founded by, like, an escaping, you know, authoritarian right-wing army, and the Maoists beat them and they flee, like, to Taiwan.
As if the Venezuelans in Miami had their own country.
Yeah,
in Miami.
They created a military dictatorship, but somehow through a process in the 80s, 90s, and now today, they've got, you know, it's not like some great progressive country, but they've got, like, a legit functioning democracy with a nice social democratic lady leading it. And, you know, I don't want them to just be, like, reclaimed by another hegemon. I get, like, that there are difficult questions here. In the same way that, like, I want China to play a role in Latin America because that helps Latin American countries get out from under the United States. Like that, like, so if I'm Vietnam or Korea or whatever, I want to try to play as many sides as possible. But at the end of the day, I'm sorry, guys, like, China is going to have influence over its part of the world. And it's a really bizarre, it's a historical anomaly of even like the last 400 years that Asia is not a world power. And so the question is like, what is that going to look like? How can that be constructive? And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of other stuff to it. But the bottom line is that when China was a sweatshop and we undercut labor here, made cheap shit there, imported it back here.
Speak on it.
That was cool for everybody. But now that all of a sudden China's like, no, we're not just making rugs, we're making 5G. And we're developing our own internal markets. And
missiles.
And missiles. And that's another thing. There's actual literal
They have these capabilities because that was the trade-off. It was built in. It was like, we will give you slave labor. You give us technology. You give us information about how to make our own things. And you also open up your markets to those things we now make. Like, that was built into it. So when we said, fuck American labor, fuck the normal people, we're going to move everything over to China because the profits are going to soar. And that's all we ever fucking care about is the profits. Like, we're reaping what we sold here. Like, this that's isn't 100, some 100% anomaly. Right. Like, nobody could have saw this coming. No, this was baked into the deal.
This baked into the deal. And honestly, and that is where I will, like, I agree with you. I don't think it's, you know, productive to just go like, oh, yeah, like, China's the future. Everything's about China is great. Of course not. It's silly. But where I really do have, like, a basic sympathy with China is just on that one area that they were like, wait a second. You were literally, you thought that we, as a thousands-year-old civilization with over a billion people and all this capacity, that we, our be-all, end-all was just to, like, make you know, bath towels for Target? Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And incidentally, like, what, you know, I'm sorry. Like, again, I'm sure, of course, like, Huawei and all these – I'm not pronouncing that right. Of course these companies are connected with Chinese military and intelligence and their defense.
As are the ones in the United States.
As are – what the fuck? Anyway, how many Snowden revelations do you need to read to understand? You don't think that Google and Facebook and Apple
and
Amazon are not interfacing with – our intelligence apparatus, our foreign policy, what we're trying to do overseas? I mean, come on. Don't be a fucking child. Like, I'm not saying, like, you know, I would – in an ideal world, we wouldn't be dominated by any superpower, let alone these two. But just don't be a child about it, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Nana, I thought you wanted to jump in there. But, yeah, well,
you know, I lived in China.
Oh, I never knew that.
I lived in Shanghai for a year back in 2008, 2009 era.
And how was that?
Fucking fun as fuck.
Where you lived there?
I actually, I may have definitely was watching Entourage when I was living in China. Like, I like remember that getting like the bootleg DVDs. It was actually hilarious. There was a, near my apartment in China, there was a DVD store called Movie World. And it was like, it would sell bootleg DVDs, but it was like a full store. And, right next to it, there was across the street, there was a new DVD store that opened called Even Better Than Movie World. it was great. Dude, China is even better. If you have a sense of humor, living in China is one of the best things ever. Like, it's just like the amount of like funny shit like that that was just going on every day is hilarious. But the feeling that I had when I was there was like a feeling of overwhelming sense of like shit is happening. Like, this is going forward. Like, this is growing. Like, entire fucking blocks. Like, they've just like raised an entire city block and then raise up like new buildings like in a matter of months. Like I had a feeling. I was like, man, I'm coming from like a dying society, like the American, you know, empire. I'm just going from like this like down, slowly declining, you know, society to one that is just like on overdrive, like just fucking forward. I mean, obviously with tons of problems and like, yeah, they would like relocate 50,000 people in a week, you know, like with no recourse. And they were like, no, you, this entire city block, you have to go move to the outskirts in these giant apartment complexes. And here's like the, like, it's crazy. Like, it was crazy to show what that was going on there. But the feeling that I had was of one of, man, they're coming and it's like, they are vivacious and with energy and vitality. And what we're is just like, we're just like managing this like terminal decline.
I thought of two other quick things. One, I was out running the other day and I listened to, I was listening to a Jay-Z playlist I haven't listened to in years. And you remember in Girls, where he's talking about, I had to leave her quick.
She kept bootlegging my shit.
That's one of the best rap lyrics ever.
Yeah, dude.
That's the craziest part about that song is that song was like a top hit. That song was like radio hit. It was like a video, and like today, that song is not flying anywhere.
That song's great.
It's a great song.
We need to move clocks in different directions. We need to move back to a time where Donald Trump couldn't be president, and also move back to a time where Jay-Z could be number one on the radio with that song. But I was talking I interviewed Ecuador's former foreign minister, and we talked about like doing it because he was trying to cut deals with China a lot when he was, and he definitely was saying it's not that I thought that China definitely has their own problems. Of course, China is like any rich country looks at us as a place for natural resource extraction, for sure. And they try to negotiate deals that are on favorable terms to them, no doubt about it. But on one hand, it was the point we made before that it's just better if you're Ecuador to have competition with the United States. That gives us flexibility. And also that the Chinese, it's not that they're... like they're not like pro good things in their foreign policy. It's just they are genuinely way more flexible. So it's kind of like, look, if you're you're running some like really brutal state, we don't give a fuck. Let's make a train. Oh, you're doing a cool like, you know, you're bringing people out of poverty because you're Rafael Correa. He was foreign minister for Korea. And you're like not doing the Washington Consensus in Ecuador. Dope. Great. Let's make a mining deal. Like they definitely have a lot more flexibility. And I think that's another thing that the United States, our mainstream media just go and corporate media just goes to like, see, the Chinese don't care. And because we care about human rights.
Right.
First of all, that's the thing is they don't lie to themselves. They don't lie to themselves.
But on the flip side, actually, Americans are honest. We do put a lot of conditions. It's just not human rights conditions. But we force a lot of shit about how you're managing your economy, what you're doing. And the Chinese, again, it's dangerous because they're a power that's trying to eat their way into other economies. I'm sorry, that is an innately dangerous thing. But on the other hand, they don't come in with the type of demands and preconditions. They're just like, you have your way of doing things. We have our way of doing things. What's the deal? What can we do here?
Yeah. Like I'm doing a lot of, I'm working on this big project on the collapse of the Soviet Union. So I'm doing a lot of research on Russia in the 90s and like the preconditions that we applied to everything they did. And we basically like restructured their entire economy. And like, if the people within the post-Soviet Russia that were like, hey, maybe we should like build like a mixed economy with some social democratic reforms and, you know, like provide healthcare and equitable housing and all this shit. Like we were like, no fucking way. You can't do that. You're not allowed to do that. You cannot do that. You cannot do that. You know, like, no. You know what I mean? Like, where there's a Chinese, like, they, but at the same time, we kept telling ourselves, and we still do this shit, that we're just like promoting openness and democracy and all this shit. And a lot of people, like, in a weird way, like, I think people do genuinely buy that shit here, that we do those things. Even the most evil people that are like not doing those shit, they tell themselves, and I think they actually believe it. Whereas the Chinese, like, they don't lie to themselves. Like, they don't tell themselves that shit. They don't have any sort of like.
Because this concept of human rights abuses, it's like, all right, your human rights abuses is just Tuesday where we're from. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like the idea that we even need to throw feints at these pretenses are ridiculous. But and the funny thing is, on the flip side, if you're America, if you're, it's like your most famous, biggest, richest corporations like Nike and Apple depend on that same exploitation. So even as America, like this concept that we don't partake in those kinds of things, it's pure nonsense.
It's pure nonsense. No, and I love
everybody
that.
Knows it. Everybody that's everybody at the table knows it, right? Like it's that weird thing. Like I was watching I was watching this movie called Bad Education. It's an HBO original.
Oh yeah,
Hugh Jackman.
That's and really good.
So
I haven't seen it. Good.
So yeah. good. It's and good. What America reminds me of is at the end of the movie where Hugh Jackman like refuses to accept that it's over, and the guy's like, "The fancy suits? Come on, we all know what you're doing with that. You're playing dress up every day, and the shit you're doing to your face, we all can see it. We laugh at you." That's America. That's America. Like they don't, like, we just don't get that the game is over. Like, why do we do this fake shit? We don't have to operate this way anymore. Like, everybody around the world actually knows what it is we actually stand for and believe in. So when we come in and we talk about American democracy and values and, wait, what about your dictator, homie? You propped up a dictator. Not only did you prop him up, you continue to support him. So what happened there? And then what happened there? Everybody is like, no countries around the world are stupid enough to believe that the lies that the American government feeds its people about our values and democracy and freedom and all this other bullshit.
Yeah, in the late 90s, the Chinese, and this is like in a totally different era, right? They did not have the power then in the way they have now. But we would put out our like human rights reports on China. And of course, a lot of it was true. They did their own like counter human rights reports, and they were actually really funny because they were not as, I watched one like briefing on C-SPAN or something, and you know, they weren't like, the presentation maybe has gotten more sophisticated, but definitely, but they were like, yeah, they were talking about US prisons and racism.
Well, the Soviet Union was the same thing. Like,
yep.
The Soviet Union did the same thing when we would be like, oh, the gulags or whatever. They're like, look at the black underclass in the American South. Like, you know, no Soviet citizen gets treated like that, you know? but like, have you guys seen the Chinese propaganda videos that have been coming out for COVID? They're fucking hilarious.
Send me a link, please. Funny. I'll send you a link to check it out.
Oh my God. They're like little cartoons of like, you know, like, you say we're lying. We told you on January 16th, you guys didn't close down till March. You know, like, it's just like full on, like just needling in a very, very funny way that like, you just don't see that often. It's pretty funny.
All right.
We're
talking Jerry Stiller.
Yes. So we can move on to Jerry Stiller. Famous actor slash comedian died at the age of 92 this week. Obviously, a lot of you guys know him from Seinfeld, as amongst many other things. I just want to ask you guys your favorite memories of the guy or how you're going to remember him.
I mean, you obviously like Seinfeld, but also he was Maury Ballstein in Zoolander, which was one of the best. I mean, Zoolander was the biggest victim of 9/11 was really the Zoolander movie, because it came out like 2 weeks after 9/11 and no one was like in the mood for it, so it bombed in the box office. But then it like kind of found a new life on DVD, and Jerry Stiller was just like absolutely incredible in that movie. I showed you the single payer healthcare ad that he cut in the 90s. I was like, man, what the fuck? I was like fucking shocked when I saw that.
What's wrong, honey?
I'm confused about Harry and Louise.
You mean that worried couple on the insurance company's commercials?
They're so confused about healthcare.
And you're confused because they're confused.
They keep saying, there's got to be a better way.
There is. The single-payer system. Everyone is covered, you get full benefits, and you choose your own doctor.
Harry and Louise, there is a better way.
Because like, no one in the 90s was talking about that shit. Like, no one in the mainstream.
No, Jared, you know, that guy was awesome. Those single payer healthcare ads are amazing, and especially the way they're answering specifically. Like, you had the Clinton administration putting out some, you know, classic. I mean, actually better than something they put out now, but you know, some big convoluted public private. No one can understand it. Whatever. And then the insurance and HMO industry went at it hard, and they did these, I forget the couple's name, but it was like basically like, you know, these really effective ads of this couple sitting in their kitchen table just being like, we don't have health insurance anymore, you know, like, I don't understand what happened. I guess the Clintons thought they knew better than we did or whatever. And the way the Stiller ads are awesome because they're an answer to the propaganda, couple of like, yeah, you know, there's a way of like cutting out all of this bullshit. Yeah. Single payer, like everybody just gets
everyone's covered.
Stop wasting all this fucking time just so these like parasite companies can get their cut. But yeah, I mean, also Murray Ballstein is one of the funny, like just the way, like even when he's like blowing the lid on the cabal and like gets into a argument with his wife about like what food to defrost. It's just, come on. And so, and especially shit like that, that you've seen be copied millions of times and it's never funny. And then you just watch the one person who just nailed it.
Yeah.
That's also like, I'm a Ben Stiller defender too. Like,
me, I think, yeah. who's off the Ben Stiller train?
I mean, you know, it's, easy, Stiller's to, fucking it's hilarious. Easy to shit on Ben Stiller because he made like family friendly stuff and was super mainstream and all of those other things. But man, Meet the Parents.
I think people started doing all the Noah Baumbach movies. Yeah, he did too many sequels.
Along Came Polly. I mean,
dude, Along Came Polly is funny.
It is hilarious. I will defend that movie. What?
That movie like Philip Seymour Hoffman scenes. That movie won like Razzies and shit. And that's, I'm like, that movie's fucking hilarious.
Ass movie, dude.
Yeah.
Anyway, but Jerry Stiller for me, he's George Costanza. He's George Costanza's father. Just the perfect distillation. Like you immediately understand where George Costanza comes from, his worldview, his neuroses. Like you get all of it just by meeting his parents. And, you know, Jerry Stiller is just incredible in that role, man.
The episode where Frank rediscovers his, like, the Korean, like, chick that he was banging while he was, like, a serviceman in the Korean War is spectacular. And, like, his delivery in the scene where he's, like, teaching George about bras, about brassieres, you know, he's, like, telling him all the bra sizes and stuff, you know, like, this is, like, the comedy of, like, those two, going back and forth, like, on that scene is just absolutely perfect.
Too good. Rest in peace, Jerry Stiller. You know, I've actually started rewatching.
Is good run.
Yeah, 92 is fantastic, man. I've actually started rewatching Seinfeld, and you know, he hasn't come into the early seasons yet, but looking forward to that. And make sure you watch King of Queens. Make sure you just watch the guy's work. Shouts to Jerry Stiller, his family, all of that. That's our Woke Bros for this week. Thank you guys for joining us on the live. Again, we promise you guys we're gonna make the live stuff even more, you know, part of what we do on a regular basis. We love the interaction. We love everybody coming through. Make sure you subscribe, rate, become a Patreon of TMBS, become a Patreon of Count the Dings. Subscribe to the Entourage podcast by Nando. Definitely. What's it called again, Nando?
Called Let's Pot It Out, an Let's Entourage pot podcast. It out,
an Entourage podcast by Nando Vila. Yeah, man, see you guys next week.
Oh, wait, real quick. Sir, next Tuesday on the Michael Brooks Show, we're doing the crossover.
Oh, yes.
We're going to be polluting
the intellectual space that I'm is the Michael Brooks Show.
I'm actually ordering a cat with a feather in it just for that episode.
I'm going to get naked.
and Mike, I ordered your book 2 days ago on Amazon. That's on its way. Can't wait to get started on that joint. So make sure you go pick up Michael Brooks's book. What's Against the Web?
Against the Web. Web
by Michael Brooks. Yeah, man. See you guys soon. Thanks for tuning in again. We're out of here. Thanks, guys.